Hey, how's it going, everybody? This is Chris. Welcome to episode 12 of NML Crossing. And I tell you what, it never fails. You know, I could be up and talking and communicating and expressing ideas, vocally. And as soon as I hit record, it's like I'm smacked in the face with like 500 pounds of allergy. It's just the worst. Like right now, I feel like there's a lump in my throat and my nose is clogged and I feel like I sound like I'm coming through like a, an old PA system. And maybe I do, I don't know, but it never fails. Everything's great until I hit record. But today is Nightwing Day, and that's a very good thing. I've always enjoyed these early issues of Nightwing, and today's will be no exception because it's a really good time. It's a fun story, and it's a story that actually, like, you can feel the progression of not just this book, but other books in the Bat family, which is definitely a good thing. But first, up late, I've been sharing my stories of my return to the back issue bins, and if that's boring, I apologize. It's just a huge part of the hobby for me, and always has been, and it's something that for a little while there I was no longer excited about, and now I'm starting to get that, that excitement again. It feels like I'm young in the hobby all over again. And last night, we had headed out to, and that was Sunday night, we head out to a record store. My wife collects vinyl, so we were out there looking for some records or whatever caught her eye. And a lot of the local used record stores also have comic bins. And I decided to give them a look, as I always do. I mean, I'm not gonna not check a bin when I come across one. So I guess it's silly to say that I decided to. It's like I didn't have any choice but to. And I was looking through, Detective Comics. I was looking through the Detective Comics section, which, record stores aren't comic stores, pawn shops aren't comic stores, used bookstores aren't comic stores necessarily. So the filing systems are just crazy. You know, you might find all the Bat books together, you might find them all separated by title, you might find them anywhere. You know, they might not even be organized at all, and you have to flip through, 500 pounds of 1993 Image to come across anything from, Marvel or DC. But I was there, and I was flipping through, and I was reminded of something that me and my good pal Pat were talking about just a few days ago, how, overwhelming the bins can be. You know, like, if you say, I want to collect all of Detective Comics, that's an undertaking, right? That is a big thing. But if you break it down into eras, kind of like we did with No Man's Land, you know, it's like, oh, I want to collect No Man's Land, which is a big, big ask and a big, big, is investment the right word? I don't know. I never consider comics investment. But it's a big expenditure. It's a big commitment. But it's a lot easier to swallow than saying, I want to collect 100 years worth of comics, you know? So I was in the bins and it was a little bit overwhelming because there was stuff from everywhere. You know, there was stuff from pre-crisis there. There was stuff from some holes I had. Like, the 800s are a big, big hole for me in Detective Comics. It's kind of when I had to go away. I was out of work for, a few years of that. I'd moved into a new place during that time, so I had to kind of reprioritize my spending. Or actually just plain prioritize my spending because I hadn't before. What I'm trying to say is, I have a lot of holes left to fill, and it gets to the point where, like, you look at all these books you need, and it's like, you don't even know where to start. So, taking what Pat and I were talking about, I decided I wanted to finish up my run of the Greg Rucka, Batwoman era of Detective Comics, which ran, I want to say, 10 or 11 issues. I think it was like 854, no, I think it was 10 issues, 854 to 863. And before yesterday, I still needed, I want to say, 4 issues from that run. Because those are a little bit weird in the wild. I know I've gotten a couple of them for like a dollar or less. And other shops I go to have the entire Batwoman run at like $10 each, which is ridiculous. So anyway, I'm at this record store and I decide that's what I'm going to focus on. Just get those Batwoman issues so I can officially wrap that up. And I don't know if this has ever happened to anyone listening. I'm sure it has. But when you're shopping for comics at a place that doesn't, you know, specialize in comics, and even sometimes when you go to a comic shop, the weird variance in back issue pricing. Because when I found those Batwoman issues, they were like $7.99, $9.99. They were like ridiculously overpriced. And I'm like, okay, forget that. And I kept rifling through and I'm flipping. And I come across the same exact issues for $1.99 and $2.99 and 99 cents. And it's like, wow, ain't nobody keeping any kind of inventory here. It's just throw a price tag on it and throw it in the box. And I mean, the issues that I got, the copies that I got were in great condition. They're not torn, they're not bent, they're not wrinkled, they're not wet. I mean, they're just as good as the ones that were marked at $8, $9, $10. It's very bizarre, and that's kind of the question I wanted to pose here, and that's, yeah, I guess I'm taking the extremely scenic route here, but is this a phenomenon you guys have come across? And also, when you, or if you, decide to, you know, undertake a new hunt in the back issue bins, do you break them down by era, like what me and Pat were talking about, or do you just, you know, grab whatever you can? Do you try to go for full, you know, linear runs? Do you just pick and choose? I mean, these are the silly things that, you know, that tickle my interest. I love talking about collecting and the bins and the hobby and just people's process when it comes to collecting comics. So, yeah, I just wasted a lot of your time just to ask a simple question. But I apologize for that. Hopefully there was something enlightening there. But with that out of the way, how about we get to today's book? Let's get into it. This is Nightwing, Volume 2, Number 20. Had a May 1998 cover date. The story is called Cataclysm Part 11, The Day After Judgment. Written by Chuck Dixon with pencils by Scott McDaniel. Inks Carl Story. Colors Rebecca Tuez, and Jameson. Letters John Costanza, edits Vincenzo and Peterson, cover price $1.95. Now we open with our hero bursting through the door of the ruins of the GCPD HQ. Much to his surprise and relief, the first person he sees there is Barbara. And she teases him a little bit about coming all the way there from Bloodhaven, to check on her, but assures him that she's just fine. I really love Dixon's Babs and Dick relationship. It's really, really fun. Really, really nice. Now, of course, she's fine, right? She lives and operates out of a Wayne-owned building, after all, so protected from, you know, the earthquake, or retrofitted, or however, fortified, I guess is the word they use. Now, she keeps nervously talking until Dick asks her to stop for a bit just so he can look at her. And again, the way Dixon handles their relationship is really cool at this point in time. Just then, we get another doorbuster, and it's Robin. This is the first time that Tim's meeting Barbara, Oracle, face-to-face, so they share themselves a brief introduction. Tim says he came to Police HQ because he couldn't get a hold of Batman or anybody at the Batcave. Dick concurs, and he was actually hoping to find Barbara and Batman here at GCPD HQ. Babs is a bit taken aback. She's a bit surprised, because she assumed that the boys' wonder would have already heard from Batman, so it's a big question mark right now as to whether or not he survived, where he's at, if he's hurt. All really good questions and concerns. Now from here, we shoot over to the Davenport building, which I want to say we saw topple over in that issue of Detective Comics where we met up with Huntress. Now it's still in the same exact state as it was. You know, we got the Davenport leaned up against the Gotham Electric building, and it ain't looking good, of course, because it looks, I mean, it could fall, crumble, collapse, pancake, whatever, at any moment. Commissioner Gordon's there. He's, you know, boots on the ground. He's helping to direct traffic amid all the first responders. Jim insists that everybody get out of the way, as, you know, this building ain't gonna hold forever. One of the firefighters informs him that one of his, which is to say Gordon's, men is still inside trying to rescue folks. You might be asking, who dat? Well, it's a fellow who goes by the name Detective Hawk. big, burly guy with a Mr. Fantastic hairdo and a healthy-looking mustache. Gordon doesn't recognize this guy from Adam, and, well, at first blush, he probably shouldn't. Now, Hawk tells Jim that they have, in fact, met a number of times, but, well, Hawk only works the night shift, and Gordon's just not used to seeing him in the daylight. It takes Jim a moment to, you know, get who he's actually speaking to, but when he does realize that he's actually speaking to Batman, he thanks God that the Bat survived. Back to the boys. They're driving through a viaduct, trying to make their way to Wayne Manor in order to check things out, and hopefully touch base with Bruce, Alfred, and the rest of the gang. You know, Harold and Ace and whoever else might be hiding around down there. Now, Barbara is on the vid screen, and she starts to kind of playfully tease Robin. She's like, hey, you know what? You could change into your civilian clothes, hoping to get a look at who's really under that tiny domino mask. Oracle doesn't seem to know that Robin is Tim Drake at this point, but is very, very curious. Elsewhere, we join a WGTM newswoman, or is it WGTV? I'm going to assume there's a typo in my script, and I put TM for some reason. Anyway, we'll say WGTV. Now, we join a newswoman named Daryl Broadbent, who's reporting to, well, nobody in the city, since, you know, power and cable are down, but I guess nationally it does play. She talks about how this earthquake is the horrifying price of Gotham's lack of preparedness. Which, what a shill. She sounds like she's been drinking that Wayne Enterprises Kool-Aid, doesn't she? I kid. Anyway, as she reports, her cameraman spies a fellow who appears to be breaking into their news van. They chase him off, assuming it to be a looter, but, well, it was like a reverse looter. He was actually there to leave something for them, and it's a package marked urgent. And I wonder what that might be. Back to the boys. They finally found their way to the ruins of Wayne Manor. Now, from where they're standing, and it's a hell of an image, you could see clear down to the Batcave. Now, should anybody get a good look, the secret, well, it might just be out. Robin worries about this until Babs chimes in with a little bit of perspective. And it's a much-needed bit of perspective, because at this point, they haven't heard a single thing from Bruce. He might be dead. And thus, you know, not be all that interested or invested in protecting a secret identity. So let's clear one hurdle before we worry about the next. Speaking of which, let's hop back to the cultural center where the Davenport finally gives way. And I think I mentioned this scene on the air a few episodes back. Like, the sheer earth-bending destruction that we're seeing on display here is, good grief, I can't even wrap my mind around it. I don't have the slightest idea how Scott McDaniel even began to bring this scene to life. But it's truly a page to behold here. It's just, it's phenomenal. It's amazing, amazing art. Now, as the dust settles, and folks, there was a lot of dust, we can see Detective Hawk emerging out of the clearing here, carrying another survivor. Now, as Gordon looks on, he's approached by Ms. Broadbent, who hands him the contents of that strange package that was left for her in the news van. And it's a VHS tape. Now, I assume I don't have to do, like, that Gen X thing where I explain what a VHS tape is to all the kids. We all know what a VHS tape is, right? Anyway, it's a VHS tape, one that, in her opinion, Gordon had better have a look at. I think we saw someone recording something a little bit ago, didn't we? Now, back at the manor, Tim asks Dick if it's cool that, you know, if he heads home to check in on his dad. Dick's got no problem with that, and he gives him a thumbs up. And Barbara asks where Robin's off to which Dick says, hey, it's private. Barbara suggests that maybe it's not so much private, but rather secret. She really wants to know who's under that Robin mask. We stick with Robin for this bit as he heads back to the Drake house. He sneaks into a second-story window and overhears his dad and their maid having a chat. Overjoyed that his pop survived the quake, Tim changes clothes and runs down to greet him. They hug and seemingly make up for some sort of argument they had before this crossover that, you know, we kind of missed. Back to the manor, where Nightwing is readying himself to be lowered down into the cave. And this is a really cool and well-choreographed scene. This is really fun stuff. like, there's a panel where, you know, Oracle hears Dick yell out. Like, he just shouts. And she freaks out, assuming something terrible had happened to him. But when we pop back over to Dick, we see that he was just scared by that stupid T-Rex trophy in the Batcave here. He just, like, it caught, like, his light caught the eye of the stupid T-Rex. Dick finally reaches the bottom, and he's immediately overcome by bats. Like, actual bats. Mice with wings. Babs expresses that even though she dressed like a campier version of a bat, she never really dug the actual critters. Once the bats clear out, Dick finds himself staring into some high beams. It's Harold and Alfred on that little skid steer gimmick. Now, Alfred catches Dick up on the last known of the Batman. He left probably days ago. I mean, who can tell in the underground here? Now, he left via a subterranean stream, as we know, and well, that's all they know. From here, we head into our wrap-up. We're back with Gotham's Finest, and it's movie night. Tonight's presentation is the last will and testament of the Quake Master? I don't know. Now, our potential big bad threatens that, unless he gets a hundo mil in cash, that 7.6 was just an appetizer for what's to come. He says he can fire up his tectonic activator? Wow, the Silver Age wasn't so long ago, was it? He can fire up this activator and crank out an 8 or a 9 with ease. Gordon solicits some reactions from those around him, and, well, they all agree it's probably best to assume that this is legit for now. He turns to look for Detective Hawk, only to find that he's already split the scene. Gordon's not too worried, though, since Hawk probably just left to clock in for his night shift. That's where we leave it. Next time out, back to the flagship, Batman 554, featuring the Quake Master himself on the cover. Huh. Now let's talk a little bit about the issue we just read here. Don't have much to say about it. I loved it. You know, I really did. This book is just pure candy to me. From the art, with a couple of exceptions, to the writing, it's just wonderful. Wonderful stuff all around. I don't think there's any other book that takes me back to, you know, my earliest days as a DC reader. You know, like my earliest days as a non-speculative DC reader, like not just getting the Death of Superman, you know, just actually going all in on DC. Nightwing was among the first books that I actually jumped in on. And while it wasn't McDaniel Nightwing, I believe Greg Land was the artist when I finally did jump in. I don't know, there's something about the McDaniel stuff here that gives me that feeling of excitement I had when I first hopped over to the other side of the new release table. It's hard to put into words, how, you know, the feeling, but it's there, and I know it's there. Like I said, Land was the guy at that point, but I do remember buying up and just devouring the Nightwing trade paperback collections that were out at the time. DC really was on top of it with their trades, like they were leading the pack as it pertained to trades. And I mean, this was the late 90s, before the bottom completely fell out insofar as back issue prices. So these trades, albeit usually abridged, usually edited, usually kind of PC, sometimes poorly edited, sometimes with issues out of order, I mean, they were still your best bet to catch up on some great stories for a decent price point. I want to say, like, the first four Nightwing trades were like $12.95. They were like really, really cheap for what you were getting, especially when you compare it to how even, you know, back in the late 90s into the turn of the century, comic shops would have like a everything in the bins is at least $5 sort of policy. You know, it could be a book that came out last week, but as soon as it got bagged and boarded, there was a $5 price tag on it. So the trades were the best way to go. And this Dixon McDaniel era on Nightwing is just where my mind always tends to go when I think about my earliest days collecting these, you know, the DC books. It's a nice little memory, and it was an exciting time. It was, as I'd already been reading comics for a decade at that point, and I found myself in that weird role of a new reader for the first time in, you know, 10 years. So it was pretty cool, pretty exciting. There was a lot to learn, but Well, it used to be that was part of the fun, wasn't it? Now it's a little bit different, but we won't get into that. Now back to the issue, We get to move several stories forward here. And I mean, it's very, very organic and fluid, the progression we're getting here, which is likely aided by the fact that Chuck Dixon wrote like half the Bat books back then. He was able to tie things together so nicely, which gave each of his books this feeling of, like I said, a fluid, natural progression and payoff when they all tie in together, which might fly in the face of that Denny O'Neill essay that you can pick and choose what you wanted to follow here. But I don't know. I mean, I'm a completionist anyway, so I'm kind of biased and I would allow it, you know. Now we get follow-up on Robin 52. We get to see Robin's story play out and his return home and father-son reunion. So we're paying that off. We get to pay off something from Nightwing number 19, where Dick finds Barbara and returns to the Batcave. And we even follow up on Detective 720. We see that Alfred and Harold, they're alive and well. We see the fate of the Davenport building. And we get Batman present and accounted for, but in the role of Detective Hawk, which was a wrinkle that I really dug, since it allowed Batman to be present, but it didn't take too much focus off of our, you know, titular hero, you know, Nightwing. Nightwing should be the star in his own book, and the way this was handled, Nightwing was still the star of his own book. Now, I mentioned this a few times early in the episode. I really, really enjoy how Dixon wrote the Dick and Barbara relationship. Their banter is super fun. It's clear how much they care about one another. Their relationship is just another one of those things that I relate back to my earliest days in true DC fandom. And there's this one issue in particular that, like, most people point to that sums up the Dick and Barbara relationship. And it's one that for, 25-ish years has eluded my grasp. It's one that kind of flew under the radar until it didn't. It's Birds of Prey number 8. And I actually saw that in person for the first time ever on Saturday, just a couple days ago. And I bought it. I found it, because I've seen it online for some ridiculous prices. I've seen it in like the triple digits, not even graded. And I mean, I wouldn't buy a graded copy anyway, because I hate that stuff. But it's usually a very, very spendy book, and I found it for far less than triple digits, I'll say. Barely into the double digits, actually. It was a ridiculous, ridiculous steal for this book, but it's one that I've always wanted to read. I've never read. I still haven't read it. I just haven't had the time to sit down with it, but one I'm certainly looking forward to checking out. It's another Dixon book, and from everything I've heard, it's a Dick and Barbara story that has never been topped. I mean, this is one that Wizard Magazine even talked about, and that's probably why it was so hard to find it, back when it was new or new-ish, I guess. Now, I mentioned early in our, I guess, talking time segment, that's what I call the analysis, because I feel weird calling it an actual analysis, because I don't think I'm equipped to analyze things, so it's just talking time. We just talk. We talk about the book. I mentioned that I had a couple, there were a couple of things about the art that I didn't really dig. Overall, I mean, the art was fantastic. There was that one scene that I mentioned with the building coming down, which was just, I mean, my brain can't even make that out. But there were a couple exceptions here. I gotta say, as much of an affinity that I have for this era, I never really dug McDaniel's Barbara. She always kind of looked like she was the victim of, Mark McKinney's, I'm crushing your head, that guy from Kids in the Hall. She kind of looked like she had a run-in with him. She always kind of looked a little squish-headed. And also, this isn't really a McDaniel issue so much as it's an all-around one for the era. But the Quake Master. Oof, what exactly is his design? When we first saw him, he looked like some bald dude, you know, kind of like a somewhat shrunken Kingpin, or maybe like the Shadow King, you know, because he had the tiny little glasses. Then in certain images, he kind of looks like Steel, John Henry Irons. He kind of looks like him because like the mask, it's still bald, but it looks metallic. And then he kind of looks like Krang's robot body from Ninja Turtles. And I get that he's supposed to be like this nebulous sort of presence. We don't know who he is, what he is, anything really. We just don't know. But I don't know, the lack of visual consistency kind of just makes him feel like a cheap afterthought. Which, for all I know, might be the point. You know, it might just be the point. Maybe I'm missing, messages being hidden in the art. I don't know. I am denser than most. Overall, tiny hiccups aside, this was a fantastic book. And definitely a value-added chapter in the Cataclysm story. I mean, these entire first few years of Nightwing are highly recommended. If you're interested in some really fun street-level bat stuff without Batman in it, I don't think you can do any better than these early Nightwings. You could probably skip the Denny O'Neil four-part miniseries, because that was a little eh. But the Dixon McDaniel stuff, I think that's something that should be in every fan's library. It's just really, really good stuff. But I think that'll do it for us for today. Of course, I'd like to hear from you guys. Your thoughts on the issue, the story, the Nightwing volume, the Babs and Dick relationship. I'd like to hear all your thoughts on that. If you were around at the time and you remember how you felt, or if this is your first time checking these books out, how they're landing for you. And of course, you can find me several different ways. WeirdComicsHistory@gmail.com, Chris is on InfiniteEarths.com, 90s X-Men on Facebook, and Ace Comics on the Twittix machine. I'm looking forward to having and continuing some really fun conversations about this era, so please, don't be a stranger. But with all that said, I'll let you guys get on with the rest of your day. But first, I want to thank you all so much for spending some of it with me. And until next time, as always, I'll talk to you again real soon. See ya. Makes it harder to think straight, starting over after it breaks, starting over when the story's got an astounding twist. You've better turn that page. When push it comes to shove, we do not fall out of love, we die.